This is the State of Things broadcasting from the Upstage Cabaret at the Triad Stage in downtown Greensboro. I'm Frank Stacio. Singer and songwriter, thank you. Thank you. You think that's good? We've got singer and songwriter John Prine at least queued up and ready to play his music, and then we're going to hear about his life story. You know, he's been making music for more than 40 years. His songs, best known for their evocative storytelling, tell tales ranging from a drug-addicted veteran to a disintegrating marriage. And he's earned lots of awards, including 2 Grammys and a Lifetime Achievement Award for songwriting from the Americana Music Association. And a new biography by North Carolina music journalist Eddie Huffman indicates that the path to his success has been a long and winding road. John Prine, In Spite of Himself, is the first ever biography about Prine. It documents his music and career from his beginnings as a mailman writing songs on his route to founding his own independent record label. It traces his battles with alcohol, divorces, and 2 bouts with cancer, and provides some insight into why he still has such a strong following today. Eddie Huffman's a frequent contributor to the Greensboro News and Record and the Winston-Salem Journal, and he joins us now. Eddie, welcome to State of Things. Good to have you here.
Thanks, Frank.
You know, what surprised me is this is the first biography of John Prine.
That surprised me as well.
What got you going on this? Huh?
Let's see. Well, I was invited to contribute to the American Music Series from the University of Texas Press. David Menconi at the Raleigh News and Observer is one of the editors. And I chose someone who I thought would fit the series, basically, and someone I was a fan of and thought deserved the attention. So.
Certainly does, Dave, for his music. And we know, you know, a little bit we already know. He's certainly a public figure. A great story. And yet, you had a little trouble getting at the story.
Yeah. It is an unauthorized biography, for
mm-hmm.
sure. Yeah. The official word from his management was that they were working on a documentary and a songbook. And they considered my biography to be competition for those things, and so they would not cooperate with me.
Mm. And I guess the worst of it was when you would ask them for stuff, they said no, and then instantly got the word out to anybody who could help you. And so while they were enthusiastic at first on that second call, things
cooled. I ran into that several times. Yeah, I would call people who were familiar with Prine, you know, people he'd worked with, other singers, just producers, that sort of thing, and they would say, oh, yeah, that sounds great. Let me check with John. And that would be the last I would hear from him.
So you just made all this up then, right?
I did.
You know. Well,
inspired by John Prine. To get creative.
Well, tell us the backstory, because you did a lot of research. Actually, we should probably say now, what did you use? You had a lot of resources that you did use.
I did. I had a lot of help from Gwen Gosney-Erickson. My girlfriend is here with me today. She is the librarian and archivist at Guilford College, and she helped a tremendous amount with the research. And there's a wealth of material. He's, as I've told several people, he would talk to anybody but me. And I did actually interview Prine back in the 80s, late 80s, for a preview for a show at Memorial Hall at UNC. So I had a few direct quotes from him. And just there's a wealth of material, you know, other interviews, YouTube clips, TV appearances, DVDs. And I actually did some trips as well. I went to his hometown of Maywood, Illinois, outside Chicago. Went to Muhlenberg County, Kentucky, where his family was from, and which he sings about in the song Paradise. Made a couple of trips to Nashville. So,
tell us about that. The early days growing up, John Prine.
Let's see. He was the third of 4 boys. His family was all from Muhlenberg County in western Kentucky, and basically moved to Chicago to find work. His dad worked at the American Can Company, where the beer can was invented or originated. And let's see. Again, third of 4 boys. He was born in 1946. Let's see. The family would make trips back to Kentucky every summer, or most summers, I think. So he was very deeply rooted in the South, but grew up in the Chicago suburbs.
And a rough upbringing as well, and one that might not have led directly to music when you think about his early gang activity.
I'm not sure how serious that gang was, but he was in a gang. It was called the Parts Brothers.
Yeah.
And he said he would sort of disappear when the rumbles would happen.
How did he get interested in music?
Let's see. His older brother, Dave, played fiddle. And I think it was a surprise to John when he saw his brother playing music. And he said he was, not a very good student, kind of aimless at that point of his life. And I think his brother, from what I could gather, his brother really recognized that and thought that John needed something to focus on and something healthy to get into, and convinced him to start playing guitar.
I mean, it's interesting that here's a guy who really hadn't thought about music much, and almost instantly he's recognized by anybody who knows anything as a pretty accomplished musician, Roger Ebert among them.
Right? Oh, absolutely. Yeah, Roger Ebert actually wrote probably the first newspaper story about Prine. And Ebert was not writing about music at the time, but just saw Prine in a club and thought he was fantastic and felt like he had to get the word out.
Tell us a little bit about that early career. How did he get started? Where was he playing? And was he writing his own music right from the start?
He actually started writing in high school. He said basically he wrote songs to impress girls. It was a way to get attention. And the way he put it was that he would make up songs. He didn't really think of himself as a songwriter. He didn't think of it as, you know, creating art. It was just kind of a hobby he did. But a couple of his early songs ended up on his second album, The Frying Pan and Sour Grapes. And he would write songs on his mail route. He graduated from high school in 65 and worked as a mailman for several years, and was also drafted and sent to the army sent to West Germany in the army for a couple of years. But he wrote songs sporadically through that period, again, just more as a hobby than anything else. And I think maybe coming back from the army, kind of seeing what some of his friends had gone through in Vietnam made him a little more serious, I think, and he started writing. He wrote the song that would become Sam Stone, sort of wrote an early version of that, and was taking classes all through this period at the Old Town School of Folk Music in Chicago, and just gradually became more serious about it, until he ended up at an open mic night one night, and he was complaining about the talent on stage, and somebody said, well, why don't you get up and do it? And he did, and the rest is history.
People liked him.
They did.
People liked him right away, although he not known so much for his vocal talent.
No. He has made a lot of fun of his own voice over the years. It's been described as something like sandpaper on shoe leather, I think.
So really, a lot of the fame that came to John Prine was for his songwriting that was covered by other
absolutely
artists.
Yeah.
And the interesting thing about this book too is not only the story of John Prine, but then as a music critic, you brought a critique to the work as well. Where does he stand in this sort of the world of Americana singer songwriters?
I think he's at or near the top of that crowd. Bob Dylan is a huge John Prine fan. Johnny Cash was a huge John Prine fan. I mean, he's recognized, and a lot of younger performers like Miranda Lambert, Casey Musgraves, people like that are huge Prine fans. I think, you know, most serious songwriters in that field especially recognize him as one of the premier
And he's
artists.
A musician's musician, right?
Yeah,
I mean,
yeah.
He's the one who, as you said, Bob Dylan, he showed up one time at a gig that John Prine was doing and sort of anonymously starts backing him on.
Came up and played harmonica at Bottom Line maybe in New York. Mm. Yeah.
Great stuff. Well, I guess the storytelling is what really makes his work stand out. You talked about Sam Stone, which is a kind of a protest song. Mm-hmm. We're going to hear a clip from that, but set this up for us, because this really does establish John Prine as a very serious songwriter.
Oh, it's a harrowing song about a Vietnam veteran. Again, he wrote it, I think, inspired by seeing what a lot of his friends went through in Vietnam.
Let's listen to a little bit of Sam Stone by John Prine.
Sam Stone came home to his wife and family after serving in the conflict overseas. And the time that he served had shattered all his nerves and left a little shrapnel in his knee. But the morphine grass grew around his brain and gave him all the confidence he lacked. With a purple heart and a monkey on his back, there's a hole in Daddy's arm where all the money goes. Jesus Christ died for nothing, I suppose. Little pitchers have big ears, don't stop to count the years. Sweet songs never last too long on broken radios. Mm-hmm.
That's a little bit of Sam Stone by singer-songwriter John Prine, the subject of new biography by music journalist Eddie Huffman. The biography is called John Prine in Spite of Himself, A Hole in Daddy's Arm Where All the Money Goes.
He said that line was inspired by political cartoons. That was he thought it was an image that might show up in a political cartoon. And it sounds like he would do that a lot. He would come up with an image or an idea and sort of challenge himself to turn it into a song. He mentioned that several times. There's another song he wrote that starts with the line, "A rainbow of babies draped over the graveyard." And he thought that was just a challenge to sort of work himself out of, you know, this bizarre image and turn it into a song that people could relate
to. What's the melody that goes with that image, right? But, but here's the thing. He really gets going in the early 1970s. There was no shortage of protest singers and singer-songwriters who were singing about social issues at the time. So it was a pretty crowded field when he entered, and he distinguished himself pretty quickly.
Oh, absolutely. I think part of it is just that he wrote very personal songs. They weren't just sort of protest anthems. They were character studies. They were really getting deeply into people's lives and sort of the impact. There's the line in Sam Stone about the kids running around wearing other people's clothes. I think he made protest very personal.
Character studies, certainly a big part of his work. Also, he referred often to his ancestral roots in Kentucky. I tell you what, why don't we listen to this clip from Paradise?
When I was a child, my family would travel down to western Kentucky, where my parents were born. And there's a backwards old town that's often remembered so many times that my memories are worn. And Daddy, won't you take me back to Muhlenberg County, down by the Green River, where paradise lay? Well, I'm sorry, my son, but you're too late in asking. Mr. Peabody's coal train is hauled it away.
From Paradise, singer-songwriter John Prine, subject of the new biography John Prine in Spite of Himself. Tell us about that. I mean, here's a guy who grows up in the suburbs of Chicago but sings as though he has spent his whole life in Muhlenberg County.
Yep. He clearly had deep roots. There's a line I have in the book where he talked about a teacher in, I think, elementary school asked him what his heritage was, and he didn't know what the word heritage meant, and he asked his dad. So he got to school, and other people were saying, you know, they were English, Scottish, that sort of thing. John said, "I'm a pure Kentuckian, last of a dying breed."
Quoth he.
So it was clearly a very important part of his upbringing.
How much time did he spend there?
It sounded like he would go most summers that he and his brothers would go hang out. And a very different world. It's very rural, still is a very rural place. Mostly coal mines, you know, the farming and coal mines, I think, are the biggest things in Muhlenberg County. Little town, Paradise was a little town on the Green River, and no longer there, as he sings about in the song. It's a very, very quaint little town where they would sort of hang out in the woods and play in the river and that sort of thing.
Was there a lot of music in the air?
There is an amazing amount of music from that part of Kentucky. Bill Monroe was from just across the river in Ohio County. And a lot of these people were influenced by an African-American blues singer named Arnold Schultz, who influenced Bill Monroe, Bill Monroe's Uncle Penn, who he sang about, this guy Mose Rager, who was a thumb picker. Thumb picking is kind of the big thing in Muhlenberg County. Mose Rager was a big influence on Merle Travis, who's also from Muhlenberg County. The Everly brothers were from there. Their dad, Ike Everly, who was a musician, he and his brothers were musicians before the more famous Everly brothers. So just pretty remarkable musical heritage from there.
Elvis Presley was not from that area, and yet he had a great deal of respect for John Prine.
I'm not sure how much he knew about Prine in general, but he was introduced to a Prine song by one of his band members and loved it.
Tell us about it. It's a great story, actually, that Elvis, toward the end of his career, would kind of get a little tired mid-act and sort of turn it over to another band member. It's a great story.
That's right. Yeah, he would get other people to sing so he could take a break. And one night they put his new bass player, Duke Bardwell, on the spot. And Bardwell had never done that before, didn't know what to sing, and somebody said, "Do the Hurricane song," and they were talking about "Please Don't Bury Me" by John Prine, which they had heard him singing just kind of around in hotel rooms backstage. And so he swallowed hard and got up and sang, "Please Don't Bury Me." So the whole band joined in by the second chorus, and ended up being a big hit. And he thought he would get fired because there's a slightly bad word in the song. And but didn't get in trouble. He said it was the only time Colonel Tom Parker ever acknowledged his presence. He thought it was a really funny song. Saw him in the elevator later and said that was a great song. So Elvis asked him to come back to his hotel room that night and had him play the song over and over again. He liked it so much.
Well, and you can imagine. I mean, here's a guy who barely knows the song. He's kind of humming through part of it, and even that version catches Elvis's ear. And I guess the point you make in the book too, just to talk about the vitality of the music. Elvis at the end of his career is getting tired. He's turning the vocals over to his bass player who doesn't sing. I mean, here's where he is on music and how much he cares. And he hears the song and he just comes to life. It sort of reawakens the whole spirit.
Absolutely.
Powerful stuff. And also wrestling with powerful demons. You talk about a struggle with alcohol.
He clearly had a lot of issues with alcohol, probably mostly in the 70s and 80s. A lot of reviewers would note how drunk he was on stage in the 70s in particular. And he's acknowledged over the years that he had some serious alcohol problems.
I guess he had in his contract, what was it, a fifth of Stoli and a case of Orange Crush?
Case of Orange Crush and a steak and potatoes dinner before and after each show.
See, if you're going to do Orange Crush, why before and after? Why the Stoli? I'm saying if you're going to mix it with Crush. Anyway, he's a great singer. I'm not, and that's why. That's the difference. Let's play this clip because I want to make sure we get to it. Then we'll talk about his personal life, too, because he had several marriages. All the Best and Everything is Cool talks about his second divorce. Let's listen.
I wish you love and happiness. I guess I wish you are all the best. I wish you don't do like I do. Never fall in love with someone like you. Cause if you feel just like I did, you'd probably walk around the block like a little kid. But kids don't know, they can only guess how hard it is to wish you happiness.
That's a clip from the song All the Best, Everything is Cool by singer-songwriter John Prine. John Prine, the subject of the biography by Eddie Huffman. It is called John Prine in Spite of Himself. Still very popular today. Where does he fit? Is he still as well known? Is he still among the gods of singer-songwriters these days?
He's still playing to big crowds in theaters. He's never been truly sort of a superstar. He's never been that well known. Some of his songs are quite well known. Angel from Montgomery, which Bonnie Raitt made one of her signature songs in the 70s, is one of his best known songs. He actually wrote a couple of number one country hits, co-wrote, Love is on a Roll, which Don Williams had a hit with in the 80s, and I Just Want to Dance with You, which George Strait had a big hit with in the late 90s. So his songs are better known than he is, I'd say, but still, very, very well respected, and again, still, playing to big crowds in theaters, and clearly a big influence on a lot of young and upcoming singers and songwriters.
Did you just name all of them? Who are some of the other young songwriters who you think he's influenced?
Let's see. It's a long list. I mentioned Casey Musgraves, Miranda Lambert. There's a great local songwriter named Caleb Caudle, who clearly has a lot of Prine in his DNA, I'd say. And I'd like to mention Sam Fraser here in Greensboro. I think is a fine songwriter.
Yeah, Sam. Been on the show.
And not only, shares some qualities with Prine, but he also was a huge help. And he was also a person who helped a lot with the book. He was my musical technical consultant for the book.
Well, the book is John Prine, In Spite of Himself. It is authored by Eddie Huffman. And Eddie's going to be at the Regulator Bookshop in Durham on March 25th and Scuppernong Books right here in Greensboro on April 10th. Find out details at our website, stateofthings.org. Eddie, that was great. Thank you so much for being with us.
Thank you so much, Frank.
Coming up, a singer whose song sounds nothing like John Prine, Jill Gardner. Here is a sample as we take a break and be right back. Thank you.